say there's something inspiring about the morning Seder this morning, listening as everyone's learning and spending hours discussing Kutzo Shel Yud, you know, with the little line at we'll see what it is exactly, but this little piece of a letter, and it's something inspiring about the depth of Torah, when we can spend hours, when a chevra of intelligent people can spend hours discussing a single line of a single letter of Torah, whether it's Ma'akev, the entire Torah. So it was very enjoyable to listen to. So let's discuss a little bit about this Kutzo Shel Yud. This is one of those topics that you don't hear much about. Again, as I mentioned, we're going to discuss a number of topics that probably you otherwise would not have encountered much. In fact, I searched on YU Torah the phrase Kutzo Shel Yud to see if anyone has given a shir, see if I can, you know, maybe hear something from Schechter about it or someone like that. And the only lecture that came up was from Dr. Schnur Lyman about some poem that was called Kutzo Shel Yud, but it had nothing to do with the halacha. So there's not much out there in terms of shiurim on this topic. But let's take a look. There's a lot in terms of the halacha over here and the lamdas a little bit also. The Gemara, as we said yesterday, on the bottom of the Daf Chav Tes Amud Aleph, tells us that if you're missing even a single letter, then your mezuzah, your tefillin, is going to be pasul. Says Gemara, pshita, of course it's pasul. You're missing a letter. You don't have everything that you need. Answers Gemara, Amar Bidam Rav, lo nitzricha ela lekotzo shel yud. No, the chiddush is that even if all you're missing is a kotzo shel yud, that too is going to be pasul. Frak the Gemara, vahanami pshita. That's also obvious, that if you're missing a kotzo shel yud, it's going to be pasul. Now, as far as the conversation in the Gemara, that's all we need to see for our sugya. That the Gemara says that if it's missing a kotzo shel yud, whatever that is, it pasuls. And that the Gemara thought that that's obvious, that if it's missing this kotzo shel yud, that it's going to be pasul. Now, on Chaf Tes Amud Beis, the Gemara talks about some other element of the letter Yud. The Gemara, it's not Gadita Gemara. The Gemara is talking about how in some way Olam Hazeh and Olam Haba are created with different letters of the Aleph Beis, whatever that means. It's not abundantly clear or at all clear to me what that means. But the Gemara says that there are Shnei Olamos that HaKadosh Baruch Hu created, Echad Behei Ve'Echad Beyud. So initially we don't know, is it Olam Haba with the Yud, Olam Hazeh with the Hey, Olam Hazeh with the Yud, Olam Haba with the Hey? Keshu Omer Eile told us Hashemayim Va'aretz Bihi Baram Al Tikri Bihi Baram Ela Behei Baram, that with Hey he created. Okay, why is Olam Hazeh with a Hey? And the Gemara gives some sort of explanation. And why is Olam Haba created with a Yud? The Gemara explains, Mipnei Shetzadikim Bo Mu'atim, because there aren't so many tzadikim there in Olam Haba. What does that mean? I would think it's all tzadikim, right? It means that, you know, not as many people make it. It's a much more popular place when you go in the other direction. There are many more people that end up there, I guess. Okay. Umivnei Ma Kafuf Rosho. And there it is. Why is it that the Yud is Kafuf Rosho? It has a bent head. Mipnei Shad Tzadikim Shabo Kafuf Roshehem. Mipnei Maaseh and Shein Dom Zelazeh. That the tzaddikim that are there, that are in Olam Haba, they have a bent head because of their maisim that are not comparable to each other. Meaning, each one deserves more kavod than the next one, so each one is embarrassed by how they pale in comparison to the guy next to him. So they're sort of like embarrassed to be there. You know, they feel like, I guess, the rookie in the big league locker room on the first day. Like, oh my gosh, what am I doing here? Like, there's, you know, you hear like, you used to hear like people interviewed on their, you know, their first day called up to the majors. Like, there's Derek Jeter's locker and there's Mariano Rivera. Like, what am I doing here? So it's Kaf of Rosh. Like, what am I doing here? There are all these great tzaddikim here. And that's why the tzaddikim are Kaf of Rosh. So that's why the Yud is Kaf of Rosh. Okay. So we know two things about a Yud. We know it's supposed to have Kafuf Rosho, and we know it's supposed to have a Kotz, and that Kotz is Ma'akev. We just don't know what any of that means. So let's take a look. What does Rashi say? Kotz Shel Yud, Rashi says, Regel Yemini Shel Yud. The right leg of a Yud. It happens to be great to have this Aron Kodesh right here. We could have. So what's the Regel Yemini Shel Yud? So the Yud has two sides. There's the left side and the right side. The regel yemini is the part that sticks, that protrudes at the bottom of the letter. That's the right leg of the Yud. It's nice that they did this in Ksav Ashuris, so we can do this. The right leg of the Yud, the regal Yamini Shal Yud, that's what Rashi says. Ask the Gemara, Hanami Pshita, isn't that obvious that you need that? Why is that obvious? Says Rashi, Halonasas Ha'os, the Halonasas Ha'os, because without that you don't have a letter. If the Yud doesn't have anything sticking down at the bottom, what do you have? You have a dot. That's not a letter. A letter has to have some form, it has to have some shape. So you don't have a letter if you don't have that regal yamini. Of course, you need the regal yamini. That's the Gemara's kasha of Hanami Pshita. Now, says Tosfos, Kotzer shel yud pirush b'kuntres regal yamini. V'kasha. He says, I got a problem with Rashi. Da Pshita de'in ze'os. What's Tosfos asking Rashi? What's the havamina? There's no os without the regal yamini. What's the obvious kasha on Tosfos? The Gemara just asked that kasha. I mean, it tells us you got to read the next line. It's like the old Arbavos Nezikin joke in Chavetz Chaim, right? Arbavos, what? I thought there were three of us. No, it says next word Nezikin. Now that's for Bekiyah Seder. No, what do you mean? You got to read the whole thing. It says it in the Gemara. Hanami Pshita, and Rashi explained Hanami Pshita because you don't have an os without it. So what's Tosfos asking? He didn't know that that's what the Gemara was going to ask the next line. So there's a Mordechai that says Kotzel Shel Yud, the phrase Kotzel Shel Yud. Kotzel Shel Yud implies that you have a Yud, and then you have a Kotz on the Yud. But without the Kotz, you still have a Yud, right? The words Kotzel Shel Yud imply that it's some addition to the Yud. So some of the Acharon will explain that's what Tosfos is trying to say over here. That Tosfos is not saying that it's not just that it's obvious that without it you don't have the letter, but linguistically, how can you call that Kotzo Shel Yud? What? Right, meaning De'ein Ze'os, so it's not even a Yud. But he's more worried about the phrase rather than the halacha.
When you say De'ein Ze'os, then saying De'ein Ze'os, it's not a letter, it's not a Yud.
Okay, I hear. But, you know, the os in question is the os yud. Right? So that's how others explain that. No, the Tshuva Me'ava is a sefer, is a Talmud of the Nod Yehuda, the Talmud of the Nod Yehuda. Nod Yehuda was one of the Gedolei Achronim, even people who don't learn much in terms of Sifrei Achronim. Like, if you look, like, Rav Avadya Yosef quotes everybody. He'll quote people who are like 50 years younger than him, who just published a sefer, and he'll quote it in his. So, but Rav Moshe, for example, didn't read that much in terms of Tshuvas Achronim. He wasn't interested. Rav Moshe knew every prima gadim bal peh. You know, he's interested in all the mepharshim of the Shulchan Aruch. He was interested, but no debiyudas chsam sofers of kivegers. Those he read. You know, there are certain big. So the number one talmid of the no debiyudas is the Tshuva Me'ava. In Tshuva Me'ava, he suggests, what Tosfos is trying to say over here, is that when the Gemara says, Hanami Pshita, what do the words Hanami mean?
I'm trying to say that even this, which is a bigger
Chiddush, that's still Pashul. So there must have been some bigger Chiddush. Meaning the original statement was, you're missing a letter, it's Pashul. Gemara says, no, it's not my Kotzer Shel Yud. The Gemara says, even that idea of Kotzel Shel Yud, which is a greater chiddush than a missing letter being pasul, Kotzel Shel Yud being pasul, even that is pshita. So what Tosfos is saying is, what's the bigger chiddush? Meaning, if you don't even have a letter, you just put a dot there, it's not even a bigger chiddush. So what's the bigger chiddush that you're asking, Hanami, this bigger chiddush too is pasul? So Tosfos is bothered by Rashi, that you don't have a letter without a Kotzel Shel Yud, the way Rashi defines Kotzel Shel Yud. So it comes along Tosfos, Mefarish Rabbeinu Tam, Duhu Rosho Kafuf. Kotzel Shel Yud is the same thing as what the Gemara says on Amud Beis of Rosho Kafuf. Great, what does Rosho Kafuf mean? So, Kedamirin B'samuch, Mibnei Ma Rosho Kafuf, fine, as we're going to see in the Gemara soon. He doesn't explain what it means, though, that it's Rosho Kafuf. So what does it mean, Rosho Kafuf? So the way, and this is a huge, huge controversy. The way you probably saw through most of the Makoros you saw in Seder today, what would you say? Rosh HaKafuf is where on this lovely Yud over here? There are three spots that the Kotzel Shel Yud could be. It could be this down here, the bottom right. It could be the bottom left, or it could be the top left. Right? Those are the three possibilities. L'chora. Of what Kotzo Shel Yud is. We'll see there may be more than three possibilities, but those are the three basic possibilities. So which is it? Bottom right, bottom left, top left?
Bottom left.
That Rosho, the other end of it, is Kafuf at the bottom. That you have something sticking out at the bottom left. You have to make sure it's not sticking out too much, because then you have a Ches. You have to bend it out a little bit to make sure. So you bend it, don't make it straight. You don't want it to look anything like a Ches. So you bend it out a little bit. That's Rosh HaKafuf, at the bottom left. But note that it doesn't really say that in Tosfos. Tosfos just quotes Rabbeinu Tam, and that's the way most of the Achronim understand. In fact, when Rav Vadi Yosef, in his Tshuvan, Yabia Omer, discusses why it is that all the Sephardic Sifrei Torah don't have this, that all the Sephardic Sifrei Torah don't have that bottom left part, he says, they're going against Rabbeinu Tam. How could they go against Rabbeinu Tam? He says, no, everyone's misunderstanding Rabbeinu Tam. He says, I can collect for you, as he always can, five Rishonim that quote Rabbeinu Tam to say that Rosh HaKafuf means the top left. Five Rishonim, in the name of Rabbeinu Tam, that all say that way. They're not like, the Rishonim that he quotes aren't like the Rambam and the Rashba, they're more obscure Rishonim. But he says, I got five Rishonim that quote Rabbeinu Tam that way, so everyone's misunderstanding Rabbeinu Tam. But the Pashut understanding of Rabbeinu Tam, like you said, is bottom left. What's his Raya? So I'm not what's Raya, but says Tosfos Vayeter, Vim Tomar, Damrin Ba'agodas Chelek, Vinar Yuchtavim, the Gemara in Per Chelek, Masech Sanhedrin, discusses that there's something that even a child could write, and the Gemara says, Dahainu Yud, what could even a child write? A yud, even a child could write. Shem hishlich nar evan bekir va'osa roshem osa yud. Because you know how to make the letter yud? Take a rock, throw it against the wall, and if the rock had a little dirt on it, there will be a mark left on the wall. That mark is a yud. Why? Because what's a yud? It's a blotch. That's all it is a yud. So Freck tells us, wait a second. I'm just telling you right now that you need a coat, so you need something sticking out, that you need to have some form to it. And that you don't have a letter Yud without the form, and that Rashi can't be correct that the Kotzel Shir is the bottom right, because without the bottom right, it's not even a Yud at all, it's not an Os at all. But here you have a Gemara in Sanhedrin that says that you know what it takes to make the Tzura of the letter Yud? Nothing, you just need a blotch, and that's the Tzura of Yud. You don't need anything sticking out at the bottom, even on the bottom right. You don't need anything sticking out to have the Tzura of the Os Yud. So Tos says, we don't really mean that. V'yesh lomer de'kein Yud ka'amar v'lo Yud mamish. A mark against the wall is not really a yud. If it had to be any letter, it would be a yud, but it's not really any letter. Okay, fine. So how many shittas do we have so far about what Kotzo Shel Yud is? We have Rashi saying, bottom right, Rabbeinu Tam, Pashtus, ignoring Rav Adi Yosef for now, saying bottom left is Kotzo Shel Yud. The Rush, in Hilchas Sefer Torah Simin Yud Beis, says that it's the top left. He says Rosh HaKafuf is the bottom right. Which is interesting. That would be called Rosho. But okay. That's how the Rosh understands. So we've now covered all three possibilities, right? One, two, three. All three possibilities of what Kotzel Shel Yud is. However, there is a fourth possibility. The fourth possibility is quoted by the Beis Yosef. The Beis Yosef quotes the Tzura of all letters from a Sefer called Baruch Sha'amar. The Sefer Baruch Sha'amar is a Sefer written by one of the Kadmonim, one of the Rishonim. I mean, Beis Yosef calls it an Achron. When Beis Yosef quotes an Achron, Beis Yosef is pretty much the earliest Achron. So when he quotes an Achron, what he means is late Rishon. So the Beis Yosef quotes from the Sefer Baruch Sha'amar. Baruch Sha'amar is an inspiring Sefer. How could a Sefer about Safras be inspiring? Because if you read the introduction, it's extraordinarily inspiring. Why would a guy call a Sefer Baruch Sha'amar? It happens to be a Baruch Sha'amar written by the Torah Tamima also. The Torah Tamima, who's an Achron, a real Achron, wrote a Sefer called Baruch Sha'amar on Tefillah and on Pirkei Avos as well. This is a different Baruch Sha'amar. Why did he call a Sefer Baruch Sha'amar? He writes in his introduction, really remarkable, he says that when he was 6 years old, his parents died. Both of his parents died. And he was left with nobody in this world take care of him and to teach him Torah. And he used to go to shul, and all he knew how to do as a 6-year-old, maybe seven, I don't remember the exact age, but as a young child,
said all he knew how to do was to say the tefillah Baruch Sha'amar. He didn't really know anything. So he would go to shul every single day, he writes, and he would say Baruch Sha'amar. He said God blessed him with a very sweet voice, and he would sing loudly Baruch Sha'amar every single day. And around town, you know, when there's that one kid that comes to shul and screams Baruch Sha'amar the whole time, so like people would see him walking down the street like, oh look, there goes Baruch Sha'amar, you know, like that became his nickname around town. So he called the Sefer Baruch Sha'amar. And he said that he would daven with such kavanah that HaKadosh Baruch Hu should help him to become a Talmud Chacham, to become someone of stature, even though he doesn't have anyone to teach him, he doesn't have anyone to help him get there. And he's a Rishon that's quoted in the Beis Yosef. He wrote the Sefer Baruch Sha'amar. So extraordinarily inspiring. Maybe somewhat less inspiring is just what his shita is on Kotzer Shel Yud, but his background story is pretty good. So the Baruch Sha'amar writes that it's not the existence of the right leg, like Rashi says, because you're right. The fact that the right leg has to exist is just part of the Tzuras Ha'os. That's not a Kotzer Shel Yud, that's the Yud. He says it's that the right leg has to be bent and shouldn't be straight. That you should make sure, as you see over here, it doesn't go straight down, it's bent inward. That's what Kotzer Shel Yud means. Now, all of these different shitas, do they argue about what a yud should look like? Meaning, do you have different opinions about what a yud should actually look like? Or are they arguing about the definition of a term? I mean, does everyone agree this is the yud and it's just, okay, which part is Kotzer Shel Yud? Is it here, is it here, is it here? But we know that's what a yud is. Or do they sit with a blank piece of paper in front of them and be like, oh, we got to write a yud. How do you do that? Well, okay, it's got to have a coat. So I think it means you put a little thing on the tail. I think it means you put a little thing on the head. I think, and they argued about how to actually make a yud.
Can you say that according to Baruch Shammai, it's just that you don't have to slant the part of the yud that could be what Rashi is talking about?
The problem is ikur chasim in a sefer then. Right, he says regular meaning as opposed to regel kafu. Yeah, right, that's what it sounds like.
You say Rashi has his own understanding of the yud?
Rashi has his own understanding of what a yud should look like in general.
And like he'll use Sanhedrin as a raya, like be anything. And that's why he says regular meaning.
Oh, so okay. Now, okay, good. How do you defend Rashi? So it could be that a dot suffices, according to Rashi. Or that at least we would have thought a dot suffices, till the Gemara says, Hanami Pshita. Right, that at least that's the Havamina, that just a dot is the Tzura of a Yud. In fact, that's what the Mikra Yosef says, that's the Havamina, that, yeah, like the Gemara says, that you just make a mark, and that's a Yud. So that's certainly a possibility of how to defend Rashi. Now, there are a number of Rishonim, the Rush, the Mordechai, who all say that there's no machlokas about what a yud should look like. Everyone looked at this and said, yeah, that's a yud, I know what a yud is supposed to look like. The machlokas is, which part do we define as Kotzer Shel Yud? Which really takes like, you know, we just spent 2 hours this morning arguing about Kotzer Shel Yud, and it turns out they're just arguing about how to define a term, and everyone agrees that's how you make a yud? I mean, you know, it's Torah and everything, but like, it's a little unfulfilling, no? L'may nafkamina. Which part you call the coats? You know, like I remember a friend of mine who was an accounting major in YU had to take a philosophy class with Rabbi Wurzburger Zichron Levracha, and the first day of class, Rabbi Wurzburger said, "Who says that this is a table and this is a chair? Maybe this is a table and that's a chair." It's like introducing philosophy. So my friend's like, okay, fine, that's a table, that's a chair, I'm done. And then he walked out like, he just couldn't, like, who cares? Who cares what you call a table, what you call a chair? Who cares what you call a coat, what you don't call a coat? We know what it has to look like. I know you need a table to eat on, I know you need a chair to sit on, I get it. Well, what difference does it make? How are you going to label it? So my nafkamina, what you can call a coat social yod? So there's a huge nafkamina. Chaznish points out, a huge nafkamina. Because the Gemara says something about a coat social yod. What does it say? That it's ma'ake. So yes, I know this is what a yud is supposed to look like. Let's say your yud doesn't look like that. It's missing something. It's missing this. It's missing this, or it's missing this. Which one of those things is going to be ma'akev? That's the machlokas. What are we going to call the coats that without that, it's going to be puzzle? That's how the Chazon Ish writes in Aruch Chaim Siman Tes. That seems to be that they're that's what they're arguing about. Now, what's the geder of this psul? I mean, you're missing kotzel shaliyot. So we know it's pasul. Okay, good. This machlokas, Rashi, let's call it Rashi and Shar Rishon. Rashi versus everyone else. Rashi that the kotzel shaliyot is this regel, and everyone else that it's some little line on the other side of things. What are they arguing about? What's the nekudas hamachlokas in terms of what kotzel shaliyot is all about? So apparently what they're arguing about is that according to Rashi, lacking in kotzel shaliyot is that you lack the tzuras ha'os. And that's exactly what the Gemara said, that hanami pshita, because you don't have the os. Without a kotzel shaliyot, you don't have a yud. You just don't have the proper shape of the letter that you're supposed to have. Whereas according to everybody else, Rabbeinu Tam, and the Rush, and perhaps the Baruch Sha'amar, you have the tzura of the, although the Baruch Sha'amar you could argue, because the Baruch Sha'amar, well, let me just say it first. According to Rabbeinu Tam and the Rush, you have the tzura of the os without the kotzel shaliyot. It's just there's an add-on, there's something else that's supposed to enhance the yud, and you're missing that add-on, and the chiddush is that even an addition to the letter can passel it. Even if all you're missing is some addition to the letter, that could passel the whole thing. And that's a chiddush. And it could have huge nafkaminas la'alacha. Huge nafkaminas la'alacha. Whether the kotzel shaliyot is you're missing the tzuras ha'os itself or you're missing some addition. So the obvious nafkamina, of course, is what we were talking about yesterday, a get. What if you write a yud? You know you need like training as a sofer gittin? I don't know if you know this, but my brother I mentioned is a masada gittin. He had to be trained to write gittin properly. You need training as a sofer gittin. So let's say you write a get and you don't have a kotzel shaliyot. You don't write the kotzel shaliyot, right? If kotzel shaliyot is a chisaron in the tzuras ha'os, so then you didn't write a yud. Then it's like you write the guy's name is Yehuda, and it says Hoda. You don't have a yud. You just have a blotch in the word Hoda. So that's no good. But if it's a din ksiva stam, it's not a din in the tzuras ha'os. The letter is formed fine. But there's a din when you write Sefer Torah Tefillin Mezuzas, you need a kotzel shaliyot and it's ma'akiv in Sefer Torah Tefillin Mezuzas. Yeah, but it's not going to be ma'akiv in a get. Same nafkamina we had yesterday. But that's the simplest nafkamina. A more interesting nafkamina, though, Beis Yosef points out in Siman Lamed Vav. I think, did I put it in the Marmar Kamos? Beis Yosef in Siman Lamed, yeah. The source number 5. More interesting nafkamina is as follows. I did not put in the Marmar Kamos. Wrong one. Sorry about that. But a more interesting nafkamina is as follows. There is a halacha by Tefillin that if you wrote it Shalok Kesidron, it's possible. What does it mean you wrote it Shalok Kesidron? Not in order. You wrote it back, but you know, you started, you wanted to make sure that it ended right, so you started from the end, and you just wrote back. This is one of those things that a person could have your tefillin checked, and the best sofer in the world is the most precise, who looks at every little detail, could never find it. He could never find this psul. This is why you need to buy parshios from an honest sofer. A Megillah Shalok Kesidron is kosher. In fact, most Megillos are written Shalok Kesidron. Because when a person learns Safras, this is a good thing to know if you ever want to buy a Megillah. When a person learns Safras, they typically, the first thing they write is a Megillah. Because the Hiddur is not so critical by a Megillah, so the first thing they write is a Megillah. And typically what they'll do is they'll start at the end. Why? What's the lamdus? Why do they start at the end? Because if they ever want to sell that Megillah, they're going to want the nicest letters to be at the beginning. So they need to get a lot of experience till they write the beginning. Why do they want the nice letters to be at the beginning? Because if you're going to buy a Megillah, what are you going to do? You'll open up the first column or two, look at them, say, oh, that looks really nice. It could be all the letters in the last few columns are lopsided and they're completely off because the guy was just, you know, did it in crayon. But you didn't even see that. So that's why people... But a Megillah could be done Shalok Sidron. Tefillin cannot be done Shalok Sidron. What if you wrote a Yud and you didn't put a Kotzel Shal Yud? And you finish writing the parsha, and now you go back and you add in the kotzel shaliyot. Is that kosher for tefillin? So there's nafkamina. If kotzel shel yud is part of the os itself, as part of the actual letter, so adding in a kotzel shel yud later, it doesn't help. It's shalok esidron. You didn't have a yud. You put a blotch. You continued to write the tefillin. Then you went back, and you added in something that now makes that blotch into a letter, and that's no good. That's shalok esidron. But if you hold that kotzel shel yud is an add-on to the letter, it's not the letter itself, it's just an extra decoration around the letter. So the letters were all written kisidron. Now it happens to be the way you wrote it, it would possibly your tefillin, but the letters were all written kisidron. And there's room to argue, it's not pashut, it's a machlokas at least, but there's room to argue that it would not be a violation of shalok kisidron to go back and add the kotzel shel yod afterwards, if you hold like those other Rishonim against Shitas Rashi. A third nafkamina might be the following. What if you left out other alterations on letters, or other additions, I should say, to letters? Meaning, the Kotzel Shel Yud is not the only addition that you have to have to a letter. It's the only one that the Gemara says explicitly is Ma'akev. We're going to learn next week. Gemara Chavtesim Beis tells us that the letters Shatin is Gatz, Shin, Ayin, Tes, Nun, Zayin, Gimel, Tzadi, all require Ziyunin. Ziyunin, we assume, means Zayins, that there are these crowns on top of the letters in the shapes of Zayins. If you ever look carefully. Look like these little things up here, right? It's like little Zayins on top of the letters. Right, on top of the letters. You have little Zions on top of the left arm of the shin, right? So the Gemara says that that's required, that you need to have that. The Gemara never says it's ma'akev, though. It just says you have to do it. Is it ma'akev? Meaning without it, would the letter be possible? So think for a second. If kotzel shel yud, we know kotzel shel yud is ma'akev, right? We know that you need these, but we don't know whether it's ma'akev or not. If kotzel shel yud is part of the tsura of the letter itself, so kotzel shel yud will be ma'akev, this probably won't be ma'akev, because this is not part of the tsura of the letter itself. This is just something that, this is clearly just an add-on to the letter. It's clearly not part of the tsura of the letter shin, to have three zayins sticking out of the left arm of the shin. But if kotzel shel yud is a decoration, an addition to the yud, and still the Gemara says what? That it's ma'akev. Maybe the Gemara is making a comment, taking a stance, that additions to letters that are required Medina de Gemara, not just Stam that a sofer adds in for his own decorations, but that are required Medina de Gemara, that additions to letters are ma'akev. Haraya, logara mikotzel shel yud. That goes Maimonios in the first paragraph of Hilchos Tefillin discusses when parts of letters aren't touching each other when they should be, and he says it's possible because it's lo gara mikotzel shel yud. Or the Gemara talks about, the Shulchan Aruch talks about regel ha'alif that's naga begaga. No, an aleph is made. You have two yuds, one, two, and it's connected to the main body. Of the aleph. Right? Let's say it wasn't just this little piece that was touching the main body of the aleph, but you actually stuck the yud directly onto the aleph. It wasn't just a little piece sticking down, this little arm that connects. You actually stuck the yud right onto the aleph over there. Would that be kosher? So the Shulchan Aruch says that such a thing would be possible. Because logara mikotzel shel yud. It's no different than kotzel shel yud. What do you mean it's so different than kotzel shel yud? Because you're missing the tzuras ha'os. And kotzel shel yud is missing the tzuras ha'os. The Rambam in the second paragraph of the Tzillin, Halacha Tes. Did I put the Rambam here? I didn't do that. Oh, I did. I just didn't put the actual words of the Rambam. So I'm not the Rambam. I had to do my Rambam. Got my Rambam? Thank you. So the Rambam Perek Beis Halacha Tes. Did I get the right one? Kolos Yosem Tiago Sheshes Evin Lo Asa Tagin Ohusu V'Garim Bahen Lo Pasal. If you didn't make the tagin, then it's not going to pasal it. Yeah, that's after he goes through all of the different tagin that are required. So the Rambam writes that it's kosher even without the tagin. Now, why would it be kosher even without the tagin? Because it's just a decoration. Kosher shel yud, the Rambam would then hold kosher shel yud, is not just a decoration. Right? Meaning if the Rambam is going to say the tagin are not necessary, it's because the tagin are just a decoration. Oh, but kosher shel yud is necessary. Why? Because kosher shel yud is not just a decoration, which means this is critical. Because it means that the Rambam holds. Like who? What? Like Rashi. That's critical. Why is that critical? That the Rambam holds like Rashi, not like Rabbeinu Tam. Because if you're a Sephardi and you have all these Sifrei Torah that don't have Rabbeinu Tam's Kotzo Shel Yud, you're going to want to justify your practice. Right? You're going to want to justify why you're not following Shittas Rabbeinu Tam. And by the way, the Rif passes like Rabbeinu Tam. So you really want to justify your practice. So what do you need? You need a Rambam, because Sfardim are going to pass him like the Rambam. So the Achronim will point out this quarter of Vadia quotes this in his Tshuva in Yabi Omer Chelik Zayin Simen Vav, and they quote from the Radach this idea that the Rambam must hold like Shitas Rashi, that Kotzah Shul Yud is part of the Tzuras Ha'os, and it's the right leg. And that's what's ma'akev, and anything else is not going to be ma'akev. The left leg is not going to be ma'akev at all. And then he says, and he thinks the Rosh holds the left leg is not ma'akev either. And therefore, we know what the Maran, the Shulchan Aruch, always paskins, the majority opinion between the Rif, the Rosh, and the Rambam. So if I got the Rosh and the Rambam agreeing that you don't need the left leg, so that's why it's going to be kosher. And Rav Vadia writes in his tshuva, this is the part of the tshuva you don't have in front of you, but Rav Vadia writes in his tshuva, V'hei l'fanai harav anal, a certain Sephardic rabbi told him, ki badak b'sefer Torah shekasav Rabbeinu ha-gadol ha-ran b'ksav yodo, that he saw a Sefer Torah written by one of the Rishonim, by the Ran himself, ha-nimtza b'sifriyah halu'umit b'Yerushalayim. Where do they have a Sefer Torah from the Ran himself, written by the Ran in the, National Library in Jerusalem? The Ran didn't have a single yud that had a left leg on it. Only the top thing on the left. Every Temani, Tefillin, Mezuzahs, every Merakim, Tefillin, Mezuzahs didn't have it. Says Ravad Yosef, Minuk Sfardim is, we don't do it. And therefore, it's perfectly kosher. And then he says, and this is like classic Ravadia, and Ashkenazim didn't do it either. Every Ashkenazi posik screams, it has to be done, it has to be done. Says Ravadia, yeah, why do you think they're screaming so loud? Because no one was doing it. There's a prima goddim that yells, what do you mean, our Sifrei Torah are all psulim if you don't have a kutzah shel yud? You need the bottom left thing. If you don't have that, it's according to Rabbeinu Tam, it's puzzle. Says Rav Vadia, what's he getting so upset about? If everyone's doing it, what's he getting so upset about? Oh, must be that the minhag in Ashkenaz was that they weren't doing it either. He writes, Ubeme shekam b'ashkenaz nagu b'kama shlo l'asuzu kutzah smoli l'mata. Quotes from a certain Ashkenazic rabbi who checked a lot of tefillin from Sofim who are Yirei Shemayim, and he says, Ruba, Inu Katzmoli B'il D'mata, V'lo Nimtza Afilu Echon Me'a Shoyuk Sherim. Not even 1% of them were kosher. The guy who wrote the Sefer that he's quoting was screaming about that. Not even 1% are kosher. L'shitas Rabbeinu Tam. Says Rav Vadia, of course they were all kosher. It's not that not even 1%, they're all kosher. Because you don't really need it. Ukvartsavach kikruchyal zah primagadim eshal avram sof simulam and beis. And the primagadim and eshal avram at the end of simulam and beis screamed about this, that it's against Rov HaPoskim. That say like Rabbeinu Tam says, Rav Adya, I'm not bothered. I got five Rishonim that quote Rabbeinu Tam the other way. I think Rabbeinu Tam is talking about the top of the letter. You know, the Sfarim are right, the Ashkenazim are wrong, and even the Ashkenazim realized that the Sfarim were right, and that's why they were writing their Sfarim the way we were writing, and that's why the Prima got them out to yell so loud, because he didn't like the fact that the Ashkenazim all knew that we were right.
Where did the Sfarim get the fact that we don't need it? I mean, Rambam says, look, Pasa, it's not Pasa without it, but not that you should write about it.
Especially the Rush says all three parts are l'chora necessary, right? So unclear. What you might suggest is that the way they're understanding the machlokas is that they're arguing what the yod looks like. Because why would you put something there that's totally unnecessary? So that there are, meaning not like the Rush said and like the Chazanish explained, that everyone agrees what a yud should look like and it's just a question of what's ma'akev. No, they're arguing what a yud should even look like. That lechora is what would come out. Now Rav Moshe had to deal with, there were big fights apparently. This is a tshuva written toward the end of Rav Moshe's life in 1985, Tufshin Mem Hei. And this I think I put in your Marmakomos. But there were apparently big fights between Sofrim and Botkin. People who were Sofrim, who wrote mezuzahs, let's say, and people who checked mezuzahs about this issue. Because people who checked mezuzahs kept on getting mezuzahs brought to them, didn't have a kosher shel yod, and the Sofrim and the Botkim kept on saying, pasul, 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 kept on, you need a new mezuzah, pasul. And the Sofrim, so what would you do? You go to a Sofer, who looks, you know, got a long beard and everything, and looks like he's the firmest guy ever, and you pay him $100 for a really beautiful mezuzah. And then you bring it to a checker to check your mezuzah, and the guy says, puzzle. So what's your next move? You go right back to the sofa. You're like, what are you doing? You're selling me a puzzle mezuzah. I asked the bodek, and he told me that it's puzzle. Right? That's your next move. So it caused huge fights between the bodek and the sofa. So apparently someone went to Rav Mordechai Tendler and asked him to ask your grandfather, to ask Rav Moshe what he has to say about this. Meaning, is it in fact puzzle? This is a big issue. A lot of times, people will buy Sephardi mezuzahs, and they won't realize they're buying Sephardi, and the Sephardi mezuzahs will not have a kosher shel yud. There is other issues also. There are a lot of differences between what they call, Sephardim use what's called ksav velish. It's a different type of ksav. There are three types of ksav. There's ksav ari, ksav beis yosef, and ksav velish. Sephardim use ksav velish. Most Ashkenazi poskim hold ksav velish as possible for an Ashkenazi. Ksavari, ksav beis yosef is more, you know, most hold is kosher, whichever way you want to go. Chassidim typically do ksavari, and Ashkenazim, regular Ashkenazim do ksav. It's interesting. Ashkenazim do ksav beis yosef. Sfardim don't. Sfardim do this other ksav. But you should just know. You should know what your tefillin are. You should know what your minhag is. You know, I come from a family where my grandfather, as the Zichron Levracha, probably had serious Hasidic roots, but like there's no remnant of Hasidus left, you know, by the time you get down to me. Like it's we've pretty much obliterated all Hasidus from our systems. So like for me to be wearing Hasidish tefillin doesn't make a ton of sense, right? We've gotten rid of every other, my grandfather died when my father was 7 years old. He didn't have any minhagim, so he sort of like made them all up. So like, okay, whether you're allowed to do that or not allowed to do that, it is what it is. But like, so I had no idea my tefillin that I wore till I was 30 years old were Hasidish tefillin. They were ksav ari. So my parents for my 30th birthday got me ksav beis yosef tefillin, because we just didn't realize that they're beautiful tefillin. So it's just good to know what you have, to know, at least know whether you're a chassid or not. You know, you should know what you have. Make sure you don't have Sephardi tefillin or whatever. Unless you're Sephardic, then you should have Sephardi tefillin. So Rav Moshe discusses, well, you have a mezuzah, and it turns out that you don't have the kotzal shel yud. The Rabbeinu Tam is kotzal shel yud on your mezuzah. Says Rav Moshe, v'yadua sheish kama pirushim b'bir kotzal shel yud. There are a lot of different explanations of what kotzal shel yud actually means. V'gam shon nogin l'hatzrich kotzal kipshuto. And our minig is to require what, you know, the pashup shot of what it really means. He's like, he's slanting the discussion. What do you mean the pashup shot of what it really means? Yeah, kishitas Rabbeinu Tam, the bottom left. That's the pashup shot, right? That's what everyone knows. Rav Avadi Yosef would say, what are you talking about? No one holds that way. Even Rabbi Natan doesn't hold that. But Rav Moshe, you know, slanting it a little bit. Lo shayich shenomer shacholkam lav einam ladina. You can't say that if you're relying on a legitimate sheet in Rishonim that it's wrong. Especially if it's a sheet in Rishonim that's been in practice and in use for centuries, you can't just look at it and say, "Oh, puzzle." Lo shayich shenachria gam b'shvileinu shaksav malal psulim oshem shelo kadina. We can't take a look at someone else's mesorah, what the ksav is supposed to be, and say puzzle. If that's been a mesorah for centuries, however. Oh no! And also says Rav Moshe, "V'gamlo shayich la'agid sheyesh b'zeh inyan shel minhag hamakom." You also can't call it a minhag hamakom. Why? Go minhag Ashkenaz. Shadavar shiyadur rak l'sofim. Very fascinating comment Rav Moshe has. He says, "Why don't you say, well, it's at least a violation of our minhag hamakom?" He says, "Yeah, stop 10 Jews in your shul, you know, on the way out of shul one morning from Shacharis, and ask them what they hold about kotzer shel yud." Right? They'll say, what, the poem that Dr. Lyman gave a lecture about? I have no idea what you're talking about. What's a kotzer shel yud? They'll have no clue. You can't say minhag hamakom on something that no one has any idea what it is. Minhag hamakom is something that's clearly observable. Do you eat gebraks? Do you not eat gebraks? Okay, I know whether I dip my matzah in my soup or whether I'm careful to like only eat matzah outside, you know, where there's no water in a dry climate. I go to Arizona for Pesach just to be makbid that there's no humidity around my matzah because I'm so makbid. You know, you could see, you know what the minhag is. You could tell what the practice is. But something that has no basis for that people won't recognize, there is no din of minhag hamakom. Rav Moshe says a similar idea when he talks about whether you're allowed to get married if Shavas B'Tammuz is on a Sunday, like this year, if you're allowed to get married on Motzei Shabbos. So he says you can't say, well, minhag hamakom, because it's so rare that it would come up that it's not something that happens all the time, so there is no such thing as minhag hamakom or something like that. So minhag hamakom has to be something that's observable, that's consistent. Since there's only yadua l'sofrim, v'lo l'kuliyama, eino b'din minhag. V'lachein, kasher mevim l'sofrim livdok, parsha miksav she'eino al pi hashita mekubelos. So if you're an Ashkenazi sofer, and there's an Ashkenazi guy, and he comes in with a Sephardic mezuzah, miyusar al shita acharis ba'alacha, but that mezuzah is based on a real legitimate shita in alacha, yesh l'sofer l'ashiv sha parsha k'shera, aval eino l'minhagen. You should answer, this is kosher, but it's not our minhag. V'adif lahasik parshios matimos l'minhagenu. And you're better off having parshios that follow your family minhag. Not minhag hamakom where you're going to apostle because it's against minhag hamakom. No, it's kosher. And it could be used in this place even. But you're not a Sephardi, so you should swap it out for something else. Avleila livsol parshios elu. Which is an amazing thing. The way I heard Mipia Shmua, they say from Moshe, Moshe would tell people to slowly change them over. It's expensive to change all the mezuzahs in your household at one time. So, you know, every couple of months, buy another mezuzah and swap out one by one. Slowly change them over. Because it's not appropriate to have one that goes against your minhag. But not as Rav Palm's grandson told me that he bought a bunch of Sephardic mezuzahs when he got married by accident. He didn't know anything about it, so he just spent like, and they were really nice ones. He said he spent like $120 on each mezuzah, and then he took them to another sofer to get them checked or something, and he told him that they were all Sephardic mezuzahs. So he said he called Rav Pam, told him can't use any of them. You got to like he passed out like Rav Moshe that use it in the meantime. No negotiations. Missing kotzer shel yud, it's going to be problematic. In addition to the other issues in the variations of the minhagim. So to summarize, what we have over here is we had three or four different opinions about what kotzer shel yud is. It seems the fundamental machlok is Rashi versus everyone else about the geder of the psul of kotzer shel yud. Is it a psul in the tzura sa'os or a psul in ksiva tama? Three nafkaminas, nafkamina by a get, nafkamina for shalok kesidron, if you wrote it without the kotzer shel yud and then come back to fill in the kotzer shel yud later, and nafkamina, whether other alterations of letters or other accoutrements that you would add to letters are also going to be ma'akev, because lo gara mekotzer shel yud, or no, is kotzer shel yud different? And then we got into a little bit of halacha lemaisa what do we do lemaisa if with the fact that so many Svardic Mizzes don't even have Rabbeinu Tam's Kosher Shliyud? So Rav Avadia says, yes, they do have Rabbeinu Tam's Kosher Shliyud. It's just that no one else understands what Rabbeinu Tam's really saying. Rav Moshe says, Dabur Pashur, we understand what Rabbeinu Tam's saying, and Rav Avadia Yosef doesn't understand what Rabbeinu Tam's saying, and but still it's going to be Kosher anyway. Just one more point to add, there is a sheet of the Chassam Sofer that a lot of the posts can use as a sniff lahakel, where the Chassam Sofer says Kosher Shliyud is not an extra anything sticking out. It's to square it off instead of rounding it off. That coats means that a sharp edge. That's all it means. It doesn't mean a thorn sticking out, it means a sharp edge. So a lot of people, a lot of the poskim, when they need to come up with a kula because something looks like it's missing a kotzer shel yud, they'll use the shita, the chsam sofer, as a snif lahakah. The chsam sofer holds it doesn't even need to have what we would call a kotzer shel yud. It just needs to be sharp edged as opposed to a round edge on the top left and the bottom left. It needs to be. So that's the shita of the chsam sofer. Okay, now we have, what do we have? Right, Mr. Brewer Seder Mincha at 1. Okay. I got to give another shot.